Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 173. I'm Rob Wright, security news director at TechTarget, and I am here, the security news writer, Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thank you, Rob.
Alex.
Mm-hmm.
We did RSA Virtual, RSA Conference 2021 last week.
Yes. The most mentally exhausting doing nothing of my life.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, so we're recording this on a Monday the 24th of May. We've had a couple of days to recover from virtual RSA and to gather our thoughts and to discuss some of the highlights and some trends and maybe some lowlights as well. But I guess first question for you. So you and I,
mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe we were there live.
Yes.
In living color,
mm-hmm.
San Francisco last year, last February, late February, right mm-hmm. before things really changed with the pandemic.
I would say as they were changing.
Or as they were changing. That's right. Because we were there and we were like getting notifications about, you know, how there was someone, you know, maybe not feeling so well at the show. It's hard to believe that we made it out of there with only, I guess, you know, they thought only a, you know, maybe a dozen or so people were infected or exposed at the show. But anyway, yeah. And we get back and then a few days later, we're working from home for the next, 14 months, mm-hmm. going on 15. But I guess, as far as a virtual show goes, how did you think it went?
Yeah, so compared to RSA last year, I think that's where my initial comment came from, because like the difference between this year and last year is that I wasn't walking. like I did just as much writing this time as last year, but it was like it was all in one place, which yeah. made the exhaustion so much more confusing.
Yeah.
But I think the show went as well as it could have. I'd say I liked it roughly as much as I liked Black Hat last year from a editorial perspective, I suppose. Like, I would say similar news value out of the two shows. I definitely think there's a certain growing pain to taking two predominantly in-person shows and making them digital, especially in adverse circumstances. We're still all recovering from a little bit, but I guess my current review of RSA 2021 is fine overall.
Yeah, I listen, I know that virtual events are not the easiest thing to pull off. There are a lot of challenges. And I think sometimes in the last year, I think maybe we've taken for granted when these shows are pulled off without too many hitches or executed without any sort of major disruptions or headaches or shortcomings. And I think for the most part, RSA, I mean, from what I saw, did that pretty well.
Yes.
I have some quibbles about, man, there was however many sessions there were, and sometimes finding what you wanted to find in the agenda was a little difficult, and sorting through the different tracks and the different delivery formats and the different, you know, what was on demand and what wasn't, and yada yada yada, it was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
But then again, when a session ended, it was pretty easy to find the on-demand version of that, you know, the recorded version of that session. It seemed like most of the sessions were pre-recorded. Unfortunately, there weren't too many that I saw live Q&As where the speakers were addressing comments or questions from the audience via the chat function. And you know, we'll touch on that later in one particular session, but I thought it was pretty good overall. And I gotta say, I know we've got two big shows coming up later this year in August with Black Hat and DEF CON, and I believe those are still both hybrid events. There's going to be online content, and there's they're obviously having people at the shows on site in Las Vegas. So, but we'll see how those go. And I think going forward, I think a lot of shows are probably going to be hybrid because it's really easy for people to consume this stuff. And there's a certain user friendliness that comes with, like you said, being able to go from one session to another, to sit down and watch a stream or a pre-recorded session and go back to it if you need to. It's especially good for us as reporters. And we'll see how that goes moving forward.
So the on-demand, I can't say enough how nice that was, because I mean, I didn't check to test how quick stuff was going up, so I can't use the word immediately, but it feels like in some cases I went back to a session like 10 minutes after it ended and it was there, or 20 minutes, but in a very short amount of time. The biggest downside, I would say, of the live versus digital is that my favorite content to write last year all came from the people I met in person last year. And I still got a little bit of an equivalent of that. I did end up talking to a couple people for some stories, but something was lost in the in-person element not being there.
Yeah, there was no... obviously, you can't talk to people at the show face-to-face. I mean, the people that I regularly get together with at RSA wasn't able to do that. No briefings, no, you know, dinner events or anything like that where you can go and chat to people, chat with people, make conversation, meet people for the first time, put faces to names. That's definitely a drawback. I do wonder, though, and this sort of leads me into just the overall point on the editorial side and the content this year. I wonder how many people that, you know, the majority of attendees are not journalists. They're security practitioners. They're InfoSec professionals. They're people that are just a lot of people that are just getting into the security profession, maybe moving from a compliance role or a legal role or a network admin role. And, you know, RSA is a good sort of primer in terms of education and awareness and knowledge. And I wonder what they think of it as a virtual event and how useful it is to just have that catalog of content at their fingertips and knowing that, you know, you can't be in two different sessions at the same time at once when it's just a physical conference, you know, an in-person event, but you can when it's virtual. And I know RSA puts a lot of stuff online. Black Hat puts a lot of stuff online. But I wonder if sort of the immediacy of having a virtual event where stuff is being broadcast live, if that gives it a little bit more oomph in terms of the eyeballs, and it's easier for attendees, for various companies, organizations, enterprises, government, whatever, for those people just to consume it and find it and pull it together rather than having to go to like a YouTube page, you know, a month later and just start combing through and you're not sure what you're looking at. You're not sure how to sort of aggregate some of the content or search for what you know, the type of content that you want. So, you know, maybe this is sort of a new direction for these types of events. Now that said, you know, you mentioned sort of the editorial value. We've talked about this in other discussions, Slack discussions, you know, even prior to the event. I think for sure RSA has sort of moved into a different phase, even different than, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. It feels like the keynotes, there just was not, there wasn't a lot happening with those initial keynotes. They're very short. Mm-hmm. They're very bland. There's not a lot going on. I know you covered the McAfee one, and that had some value. Steve Grubman had some interesting things to say. But overall, I thought some of the keynotes were kind of, and I don't want to, you know, but I'd rather cite the names and the titles of the sessions that I thought did pop. But overall, I felt like the keynotes were kind of lackluster. They weren't really doing it for me. And I wonder if it's just the tone and the length of some of these keynotes, if the speakers were just like, I'm just going to play it real safe, real simple, not get into specifics, get in, get out, and, you know, and that's that. Because it just really, I didn't find them very interesting at all.
Yeah.
I don't know what your take was there.
The tone of the conference was fairly awkward in points, I yes. would say.
Resilience, Alex.
Resilience, which, I mean, that first RSA keynote that kicked off the show. I mean, I don't know if the phrase "we're all in this together" was said, but it had very much a "we're all in this together" type energy.
I would
call the tone of the show fairly awkward, because at the beginning of the show, I would say it was much heavier at the beginning of the show, and as it went on, this became less of a problem. You had some awkward keynotes that, I don't know the financial situation of the show, so I don't know if it was sponsored or not. I'm guessing some of that may have been at play.
Yeah, a lot of the keynotes here.
Which may have fed into it. But then towards the end of the show, you got some really good newsworthiness stuff, like the SolarWinds CEO pushing the timeline back, and then an interesting election security panel. But a theory that I had that I think I shared either at one of our meetings or on Slack was that I wonder if the total virtual nature of this meant that because everything was pre-recorded, or at least a significant majority, you got more cooks in the kitchen who had the freedom to whittle stuff down and smooth out the edges and create a few keynotes that I won't name, but there are more than one of them that felt like they were kind of saying nothing.
Yeah, like over-rehearsed and sort of under... Yeah, it's just...
The humanness felt like it was taken out of some of the content.
I think, given the amount of space that some of the keynotes had, some of this, the amount of time and just not being in front of the audience, I definitely think affected, you know, maybe the delivery and the tone and the energy level. But the content, like so you brought up the SolarWinds CEO. We wrote a story about it because there was pertinent information. Ramakrishna said that, you know, the attack, you know, now we know the attack, or at least we're pretty sure the attack has started as early as January 2019. Oh, that's important.
Yes.
And, oh, by the way, we shouldn't have said the things that we said about the intern with the password, the SolarWinds 123 that was... You know, a lot of people harped on because it was the password, I think, to one of their GitHub repositories, and who knows, maybe other assets as well. You know, those are newsworthy things, but like that was a short conversation, right? I mean, I think he was only sort of on camera there for about 15 minutes or so, and
it was either like 14 minutes or 21 minutes, but it was fairly short regardless. Yeah.
And look, he's in a tough position, and he was pretty open about like, here's the deal. I offered to resign, you know, look, that's good color. But man, I wanted a little bit more substance. I could have listened to more of that discussion, of just him talking about, okay, this is where we were in the first week. This is where we were in the first month. Like, we've had to revise the timeline of a few different times, and these are the companies that have helped us out. I would have loved to have him kind of weigh in on, like, hey, we still don't know. We're still looking into how we were initially breached. I know he touched on that sort of indirectly, but, like, you know, there's that whole situation with Microsoft where, you know, a couple of months ago, it sounded like, you know, they thought SolarWinds thought that there might have been a Microsoft vulnerability with Office 365 or some other related piece of software or service that was exploited by the attackers to get into the SolarWinds environment. You know, it just came up a little short. Again, I know we wrote about it because, you know, he did say a few important things in there, but it just felt incomplete.
I
wonder if that would have been different, like you said, if he was up on stage live.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he had just gone up there and been there for 15 minutes, like, that would have seemed so weird in the moment.
There would have been no Q&A either.
If you were in the audience and you were sitting there in a big ballroom and, like, he sits down with the vice
Laura
president there.
Kotzel?
Yes. Yeah. And was just like, yes, this was my experience. And then, like, 15 minutes later, it's like, thanks for coming, everyone. I think that would have gone over much differently. I don't know that he could have gotten away with that.
Yes. And the other difficult thing is, so the January 2019, one of the main reason this was worth writing were the facts that came out of this story, the January 2019. The birthday dinner thing had probably been mentioned, but I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah.
The offer to step down, which I do believe. But it's so hard to tell with these kinds of CEO panels what they want you to be seeing and what he in the situation is actually like.
Yeah.
Because watching that session, Ramakrishna was talking about he had this very, like, he described it as optimism. He had a specific word for it. Stubborn optimism. That was his phrase for it. And on the one hand, you listen to that and you're like, okay, maybe SolarWinds comes back from this. Maybe they don't even need to change their name or something. And then, like, 2 seconds later, I'm like, this is exactly what he wants me to think.
Yeah, I know.
I agree that it's frustrating we didn't get more, especially because the only things you can really trust out of this are the actual facts and numbers and dates.
Yeah. Even those are, like, you know, I mean, obviously we've had to sort of update that timeline now a few times.
Yes.
Even that stuff changes. It would have been nice to have more, especially on things like when he said, you know, oh, the attackers had done everything possible to hide in plain sight, you know, to Kotzel's question about, you know, well, how did they stay undetected? How did they get inside and do what they did without being seen? But he didn't really like, it would have been great if he had just spent 60 seconds to say, you know, this is sort of in a nutshell what they did, and we missed it, and, you know, hey, we're not going to make that mistake again or whatever. But alas, you know, it wasn't that.
No technical bones were thrown.
Yeah.
During this.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, there were other sessions, I think, that were, you know, that were good or that had newsworthiness. There was nothing on the level of, like, a Black Hat or, you know, DEF CON session where they're talking about novel techniques or new vulnerabilities or just really game-changing research or threat detections or any of that. It was a lot of it was on the business side. It was, like, you know, attorneys or CISOs talking about, like, you know, here's what to do in incident response, or here's some lessons learned, or, you know, so on and so forth. And, like, I think there was some value in those sessions. And again, we wrote a number of stories, and then like there was this session with Netscope and Chipotle that Ariel, our colleague, Ariel Waldman, she covered and wrote about that I thought was pretty interesting about just, you know, here's what, you know, here's a few different ways. I think it was five different ways that you can really screw up incident response and aid the attackers during a cyber attack if you do these things during IR. And, you know, some of the stuff was pretty obvious. A couple of the points were, you know, hey, I hadn't thought of that, or that's pretty good advice, especially for a newcomer to enterprise cybersecurity. So, you know, value, if not explosive newsworthiness, I would say.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that in there. But and then there was, you know, you covered the there was a lot on election security this year.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, obviously with good reason, there was a lot to talk about. But it's weird because there was no successful like DNC level hack or, you know, no one's campaign share got fished, or there wasn't any huge like WikiLeaks dump or anything like that, or no, you know, oh, we've detected intrusions in these election, registered voter databases. There was none of that, and yet quite a bit of it about, well, just election security in general, and then obviously misinformation and disinformation. And some of that content was kind of, but you did one that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was a pleasant surprise. That in a lot of ways, the value that came out of that panel was a pleasant surprise from a news perspective.
Yeah.
In part because it was a pretty strong panel there.
Yeah.
The three people being interviewed. Well, it was Scythe, founder and CEO Bryson Bort, but he was interviewing FBI Section Chief Cynthia Kaiser, Maricopa County, Arizona, Cyber Ninjas fame Lester Godsey.
Well, he's not with Cyber Ninjas. He's
He's
the CISO.
Of Maricopa County, not with Lester, Cyber Ninjas.
Yeah, let's Lester be would very not be clear. Happy. If...
Yes. And then that would be a hoot, that panel. Just a Cyber Ninjas guy with someone from FBI and CISA.
Yeah, jeez.
Oh, wow. God. Okay. And then Jeff Hale, senior cybersecurity advisor at CISA. So half the reason this was relevant was what wasn't said, given events last week. But there was a lot there that was actually worth digging into. The overwhelming theme, if I had to condense everything down into one point, I recommend anyone listening go to searchsecurity.techtarget.com to read the full story. But the overall sort of consensus here was that the misinformation, disinformation thing and the nation state attempts on the American democracy, both of those things are only going to get worse with time. And Kaiser had probably the best quote in the entire thing. FBI's Kaiser. What I worry about is a 2022 or 2024 where adversaries believe they can conduct these activities with impunity, that there's no consequences or risks to conducting activities that they're seeking to do. She goes on to say that. I think that's why FBI Director Christopher Wray announced the FBI cyber strategy in the fall, focusing on imposing risks and consequences on cyber actors, she closed on. I think it's essentially about getting some of these adversaries to change their cost benefit when they're thinking about doing some of these activities in the first place, which that was like, for me, that was the standout moment for what was.
Yeah. It's like
in that session,
we've got to do something to you know, if not respond, to let them know we're going to respond and that we're not going to take this lying down. And we've talked about sort of the increase in rhetoric around consequences and potential response for a lot of things, not just election security, but SolarWinds. And, you know, we obviously talked about the hacking back debate that arose, godforsaken 60 Minutes episode. yeah, I thought that was interesting. I also thought one of the things that really stood out to me was the way those guys talked about, you know, hey, we knew we needed to change the way we did things in 2020 going into to 2020. We needed to coordinate and improve communication between CISA and the states and the FBI and private security companies that were working on behalf of different locales. And I thought, you know, like when they said, oh, it was like night and day this year, you know, or last year, so much better in terms of preparation and trading information and staying up to speed on things. I was like, really optimistic. I was like, that's great. I mean, I'd read other stuff and heard other stuff about that before, but just hearing, you know, three different people in three different positions sort of talk about that and sort of reaffirm that, it's like, this is good. And then you get to the point where it's like, well, you know, we dodged a bullet. We didn't have any cyber attacks or didn't have any ransomware or whatever. But this misinformation stuff, this social media stuff, just the and sort of the kinetic results of this stuff is just going to keep getting worse. I'm like, oh, that's really deflating. I guess I didn't think it was going to be any different. Like I should have expected that response, but I don't know. It was
depressing.
Yeah. And I know I said this earlier. I thought earlier, not on this podcast, but you know, just sort of amongst us, us CERT security reporters and editors in our Slack conversations. I understand why they didn't do this, but it seems hard to believe in retrospect that, like, you know, for all that panel was dominated by the concerns about misinformation and disinformation and how it spreads and who's spreading it and why and what are we going to do about it. And it's hard to believe that no one said, you know, the name Trump, or no one said, like, you know,
the former president.
No one said the former president or the former president's supporters or the former president's campaign. It was left unspoken. And I get it. If, you know, someone on the FBI or someone from CISA says, you know, we've got to do a better job holding people accountable because the big problem is President Trump and his people, like, people are going to flip out. Republicans are going to flip out. And then it's going to become a big drama, controversy. People are going to be like asking for that person's job. You know,
but the way you would say that probably wouldn't be Trump and his supporters are bad. It would be like, examples of this include Dominion voting systems.
Yeah.
This. Things right. With established factual bases. They don't even have to say Trump if they don't want to. They can just name the controversy and what the accusations were. But they didn't go that far even.
No, they didn't even go that far. And it's, look, I get it. Like, I want to have a policy. I want the government to have a policy where they're letting adversarial governments know that they can't do this sort of thing. And I think it's great that they talked about all these different ways, like, you know, they have these social media monitoring dashboards and, like, you know, Lester at one point, I'm calling him Lester, like I know him. I feel like I know him after I watched that panel of the poor guy and like what he had to go through. He was talking at one point about how they picked up chatter about like a coordination amongst, I presumed, Trump supporters who were like coordinating they had planned a caravan or built started a caravan of Trump supporters, and they were following Maricopa County election officials around, just like following them, driving like this big caravan around as they went from location to location to, I guess, you know, I don't know, collect ballots or check in or, you know, provide assistance wherever it was needed. Who knows? And I'm like, that's crazy. Like, if you were an election worker and you felt like you were being stalked, like, I would just, you know, no thanks. But I don't know. I felt like, man, I get it. You don't want to politicize stuff. But, like, the hope of not politicizing this stuff and not sort of laying it at the feet.
How
of,
do you not politicize an election? Sorry to interrupt. But yeah. I'm talking rhetorically, not
but,
you.
But not just that. Not just the election. But, like the hope of avoiding any sort of political controversy about laying blame at the feet of one party more than the other, or one party exclusively, man, that ship sailed. like that is that's gone. That ship sailed on January 6th. So it would have been nice if they had been a little bit more direct about the type of misinformation and how it was being given air by, you know, certain members of the GOP, certain members, you know, the president himself, the former president. But I think, you know, given that limitation and that choice of not going there, I thought it was a pretty damn good panel and look at what these guys were doing at the ground level and how things were better in 2020 versus, you know, maybe 2016. So
sure.
Good overall.
Yeah.
I don't know, Alex, any trends stand out? Anything that, I don't know, that you felt like really was a theme besides resilience?
you mean including resilience? Including was there a single theme?
Was there a single one?
Yeah, I have two.
Yeah,
the first is the ever-present theme of ransomware.
Yeah.
Ransomware is bigger. It's so hot right now. And this show definitely, it reflected it a little less than it could have. I think the election stuff was like
sure.
kind of the overwhelming thing, but I think there could have been even a little more ransomware. The other one is, the incoming trend is supply chain attacks.
Yeah.
Like undoubtedly, I think if we're talking attack types, that like you and me are going to be thinking about in the future. And I think security professionals who actually have to deal with this on the ground level, it's ransomware and it's supply chain attacks. Those are the two trends.
Yeah. And I think you're right about ransomware. There could have been a little bit more content about it and with more sort of tangible data and information and findings, but the way I think you're right. Like the way people were talking about it, it feels like we've crossed into like, okay, this is really serious. We can't keep doing this. Like we've got to do something about this. We've got to respond, not just private sector and public sector as well. Like this is untenable. I think for me, in addition to those, I picked up those themes as well. But there's one thing that really, you know, in some of those panels that we're talking about, sort of security management, IR, just sort of the business side of security, I was really picking up a theme where, you know, on one hand, there was a lot of there seemed to be quite a few sessions where threat researchers were either directly calling for or, you know, sort of indirectly saying, hey, that this would really help information sharing and transparency from breached organizations.
Yeah.
There was one in particular, the Sentinel One session on the Sunburst adversary, where the gentleman, the speaker was talking about, you know, it'd be great if we had some of these organizations that were hit with this stuff, providing the samples in a more timely manner so that we could do real, you know, analysis and not just, you know, IOCs with file names and so on, you know, URLs. But so on one hand, you had these threat researchers saying, we need more information sharing. We need more transparency. We need more of these organizations that are being hit with this stuff to come to the table with these samples and try and, you know, just give full color to what happened in their environment and what took place with these attacks. And then you had the other side, which is mostly lawyers, but even some CISOs and some up the some, you know, C-level management, basically telling the attendees, like, here's what you should do to limit your liability and to, like, protect yourself when you're breached from a legal perspective. Like, here's basically how to withhold damaging information and withhold data that could be that could negatively impact you. And if that's like, if we're, you know, that's always been the case, but if in this particular show it seemed more pronounced, and if we're going even further in the direction of just being hyper conscious about legal liability and what you need to, like, don't put anything in email. Don't share any details about the attack. So you're not uploading any samples. You're not providing any sort of information about the nature of the attack. You're not providing any IOCs even. That doesn't seem compatible. Mm-hmm. Like that just does not seem compatible with like an overall improvement in cybersecurity postures and getting people the information they need to act upon it. There's way too many organizations out there that have been attacked and shackle their people with NDAs, and you never hear about the real details of an attack or a threat, even when they stop some of these threats. And it's just, it drives me crazy. And this year it really felt like I said, even more pronounced. And I wonder what's going to happen with that. Cause like I said, it's not, those two schools of thought are not compatible. And if you have your threat researchers saying one thing, the people that are doing the nitty gritty, the groundwork on this stuff, but then you have the upper level folks saying a completely different thing and going in the opposite direction, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad. So we'll see, something maybe that we can revisit down the road, but
my third RSA podcast on risk and repeat.
Probably not going to be a hybrid. Probably back at Fisherman's Wharf at the In-N-Out Burger, and walking 10 miles a day or whatever it is. I actually don't know how many steps. I don't have a Fitbit. Yeah, who cares?
can't wait.
Well, we got through it, Alex. We got through it. We may have some additional RSA Conference 2021 content coming here in the future, so stay tuned for that. And, Alex, thank you for joining me on this initial RSA recap podcast. This was helpful.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.